Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm bringing hassle back.
The mother boys don't know how to act.
Yeah.
Get your sexy on.
You ready?
We are hour number three here on this Tuesday afternoon. The gang is all here. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Max Herz in the saddle.
Get to talk to my BFF.
It's been a while.
It has.
Tim Hasselbeck, who joins us. Timmy, how you doing?
What's up? Yeah, listen, this is Tuesday. I'm doing this on a Tuesday because Chase is back in the seat, baby. Let's go.
What's up, bestie? How you been?
I've been great. I appreciate all the hard work you've been doing. I know you've been busy. It happens sometimes over the summer. People take vacations, you know, so that's good. It's good to be back on with you, Chase.
Thanks. It's good to talk to you, Timmy. Good man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you can go now.
You let me know when you guys are done.
We're done.
So
we're good.
Step in here.
Not when you interview somebody that you know, like on like in TV or radio or whatever. I mean, you guys have been in the business long enough. Like, it's like, was that a real conversation? Because like, we're such good friends that I felt that way with my brother sometimes, where you know, like I interview, like is this sound natural? Because it sounds a little bit like made for TV or radio when I'm doing it, when you're so close with somebody. Like, that's how it feels with Chase and I.
I've got other words to describe what's happening, but I don't think it's airworthy. Anyway, let's start with your buddy,
jealousy.
Another buddy. I guess it's this one's a fake friend on television, or maybe it's real. I don't know. I don't know what's real and what's fake anymore. Matthew Berry, a guy that you've worked with for a long time and spent a lot of hours talking fantasy with. He's been at ESPN for, I think, 15 years, I believe, but I don't know the time frame. It was yesterday, the day before, in the last 24 or 48 hours, he is no longer going to be an employee of ESPN. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I was surprised by it. I mean, not that I know the intimate details of, you know, his employment situation with ESPN, but just surprised from it from the standpoint of like what he, you know, it's probably meant to fantasy sports in general, but certainly fantasy football at ESPN. And I can just say for me, I started off doing strictly NFL, you know, analysis and coverage, and had the opportunity relatively early on in my time at ESPN to be on Fantasy Football Now, which, you know, I think when I, you know, had talked to the people at ESPN about working on that show, it was an internet show only. It wasn't a show that was on TV and then ended up on TV. And I used to tell people, like, you know, when I would, you know, maybe run into somebody that I didn't know kind of out in public, they wouldn't necessarily say, like, oh, hey, I hated your analysis of Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers, but they would say, like, hey, you know, you helped me win my fantasy league, or you killed me by telling me to start this player here or there. I mean, it was almost always fantasy sports and fantasy football related. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that Matthew Berry, along with ESPN, have done a lot for just the popularity of, you know, of fantasy football, being able to play it on the ESPN platforms. And I know a lot of people liked his writings, and I'm sure that he'll do well with whatever he's deciding to do next.
Speaking of the Steelers, it's going to be very odd for announcers and everybody to not call it Heinz Field. That relationship is done, too. I don't even know. Acrisure? I don't even know what the name of the new field is. Something. I don't even know what they are. So
that's going to take a little practice.
Do you guys – I don't know how long it takes you guys, but, like, I think I still say the Meadowlands. Like, clearly it's MetLife Stadium. But, like, don't you feel like – there are certain things that, like, it doesn't change in year one. So I don't know how long these sponsorship deals typically go for, but
hasn't it been Heinz Field for like 20 years
since it opened?
Right. So it's not going to be a quick adoption.
Mm-mm.
I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, think about how people have still say the San Diego Chargers, right? Like there's a bit of an adoption stage.
Oakland Raiders.
When you rename something. See? Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's exactly. L.A., the Staples Center. I mean, yeah. You know, I...
Well, I just got back from Milwaukee, First Family Field. They still call it Miller Park. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's...
It's crazy. Like, whenever they make the change, I don't know how long it takes, I think, to your point, for us to call it the correct name, but it's certainly... This one's going to take a while.
But the financials... Jacobs Field. The financials just blew it away, according to what I read. I mean, whatever Heinz was paying, it's like triple.
Really?
Or something. Yeah.
Well, then, Willie, they better be paying for quick adoption.
We didn't get a chance to talk to you last week. The deal was made. Speaking of adoption, Carolina has adopted Baker Mayfield. They have traded for him. What did you make of that move?
Yeah, surprised by it. Not surprised by the financial commitments, you know, in terms of what the Browns, you know, are eating in salary. But surprised just because of the quarterback room. Like, to me... That doesn't, and not that anywhere that Baker went, you know, was going to be this great quarterback room, but I think two guys in the same draft class that, you know, essentially are playing to prove that they can still be a starter in the NFL. I just don't know that it's going to create a good environment or an environment for either one of those guys to be successful. And not that it would have been a great situation for Drew Lock in Seattle had Baker ended up in Seattle, but... I think it would have been more assumed that Baker was going to be the starter in Seattle. And so I think that would have created a different environment than what probably is a competition still in Carolina. And I think unless somebody just starts playing outstanding from the get-go, I think it's going to make it nearly impossible for either guy to have success.
So, Tim, how would you try to sort it out if you're McAdoo, the coordinator, Rule, you know, they, and it's not like they are coming into an environment where those guys have had a lot of recent success. I mean, they're trying to find something there. So it's not like they got a lot of security. So how would you try to set the competition?
No, yeah, so here's what I would do. I would sit both guys down, even the third guy. I don't even know who the third guy is there right now. So the third guy there, and I would say, look, here's the deal. We're splitting these things 50-50. One day you're going with the ones, the next day you're going with the ones, and then you're going with the twos. The reps are going to be exactly even. You're going to get the same number of throws. You're going to get the same opportunities with the ones as you are with the twos. You know, at some point when we feel like somebody has separated themselves and played better than the other guy, we're choosing that guy, and we are going to give you as long of a leash as we can to let you succeed. And that's how we're doing it. I want you guys to understand right now that's how we're doing it, and we expect the guy that's not named the starter to be supportive because you don't know based on injury or performance when you are going to get your chance. That is how we're doing it. We need full buy-in from the guys, and that's where we're going. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to have success, that the guy who wins the job in camp is going to play well enough to keep the job. But I think you have to try to create an environment where that guy can succeed. And I would guess that that's the best way to do it. And so I think that's your best path, because I think anything other than setting those clear expectations, I think it's going to be too hard to, there's no other better way to say it, to have a good quarterback room. And I believe you need a good quarterback room for the starter to play well.
Tim Hasselbeck, Coach Hasselbeck here with us. 102.5 The Game, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every week. Okay, so this could be the same answer or it could be two different answers. Who should win that competition? Who will win, in your opinion, that competition?
I think Baker ends up winning the competition just because of his experience, his style of play. Like, his experience has been better experience than Sam Darnold's. And I think, you know, when there's a new player, I think the intrigue and excitement around a new player versus somebody that's been in the building with that staff for over a year gives the new player the advantage. It just, I think it's kind of human nature in that sense. So, you know, I think Baker, ends up winning the job. And I think there's probably also an expectation that you could get Sam Darnold to be the more supportive backup just based on personality, then you would be able to convince Baker to assume that type of role if he doesn't win the job.
Okay. It'll be interesting to watch for sure. So are you believing Gronk? He's reiterated that he's done with football and that he's retired. There's been rumors that, you know, he could come back if Brady calls. Are you buying him reiterating that he's retired, or do you still think there's a chance?
Yeah, here's what I think. I think he truly is retired now. And I think that if Tampa is in a situation where things are going fine with how they are, that Tampa may be fine with him being retired because they've got other good players at the position. But I think that if they evaluate where they are come November, December, and it's like, you know what, it would be helpful to have him because an injury at wide receiver or an injury at running back or an injury at tight end, it would be helpful to have him back. I think he would consider it then when it's not the marathon of the entire season and it's a few months of work, you know, getting paid really well, doing something that you love doing and doing it with a guy you love, you know, playing with and an opportunity to win a championship. Like, so I don't think it's like, hey, it's done, set in stone. I do think he's retired now, but I think a shortened season, you know, something through the playoffs is something that he probably would consider.
Okay, be another thing to watch. I like throwing a lot of different things at you, you know, and we haven't done this in a while. So I don't know if you've really weighed in on this. With Malik Willis and the Tennessee Titans, would you be in favor of having designed packages with him involved? Like we kind of saw towards the end of Mariota. We've seen that, obviously, yeah, around the league. Is that something that you would like, or would you prefer him to sit on the sideline as either the backup or the third string, hold the clipboard, and just learn?
No, I think you use good players. And here's the deal. This is what I said about Malik Willis, you know, in the draft evaluation, him coming out. It was probably one of the first things I wrote down watching him. He is an A-plus runner. Like, he is, and you know, I remember talking to someone at ESPN Research about this. I think he caused more missed tackles in college football last year than any other player. So, like, that includes Kenneth Walker. Like, that includes running backs that were getting drafted, you know, high in the draft. So I think if you have good players on your team that have a unique skill set, excuse me, you use them. And so I'm fine with having a package. I think the harder part is figuring out when you use it and when you don't. But, Chase, you're right. Like, they did it with Mariota, and that was a year where there had been a quarterback issue. And you see Mariota doing it, you know, you saw him do it with Las Vegas, and it worked for them. Didn't hurt Derek Carr. So I think if good players use them, I just think the hard part is figuring out how and when.
Tim, are we going to get resolution at all in the next week or two on Deshaun Watson's situation?
I mean, Willie, I think we have to. You know, and I would guess that the Browns want it. And so I don't know if, you know, trying to negotiate some type of deal is the holdup or if, you know, excuse me, what the holdup is. But ultimately, like, the NFL has got to make a decision on this. And, you know, and maybe the holdup has been, listen, if you know, the desire to negotiate something because the suspension is going to be so significant that he's going to fight it, which is going to create a problem, which is going to make it drag out, which is bad PR for the league. Like, my guess is that's the holdup. And my guess is that if it's over a year suspension or a year, you know, at least a year, then he's going to fight it. So, you know, my guess would be, like, I just think the league has to do something. I already think it's been too long.
You're getting choked up on this interview, aren't you?
You know what? The allergies. You know what? You know what it is. It is. It's because Chase is on. Like it's like it just means more when Chase is on. I mean, no offense.
The SEC.
Like,
no,
SEC.
It happens.
Suit executive committee. It just means more.
Wow, this was great, Tim. Thank you so much. This is awesome. Have a great rest of the week. Let's do it again next week.
Jason, it's great being on with you. You know, it's always great when you take the suit off and you know, get back in the studio.
Thanks, Timmy. I appreciate it.
Tell Matt we said hello. See ya. Tim Hasselbeck. That's what I think of that. We'll come back. More DDC next. Alex Pillow will join us at the bottom of the hour. Back here on the DDC. If you didn't hear David Poyle's interview to start the show, he started us right at the jump. You can hear that again at 1 o'clock. We'll play that. Jeremy Fowler has been putting out his list. It's the time of year for the list. And the latest installment,
I thought that
is,
was Fridays at noon.
Yeah, well, that's a different list. That's the bad list. I'm assuming since he's ranking them, this is a good list.
It is a good list.
So he did running backs.
Yep.
And what jumped out at you?
Well, do you want me to – I can read them off real quick. Do you want me to start at the top or at the bottom at number 10 and work our way up?
Let's start at the bottom.
Okay.
Because I'm more interested in us trying to play along probably at 5. So let me hear 10 through 6.
So I'll give you the honorable mentions that are not in the top 10.
Okay.
Austin Eckler, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley. Those are the three that he had. So basically 11, 12, 13.
Oh, so those are not even in the top 10.
Not in the top 10.
Wow. Austin Eckler, not in the top 10.
Hmm. At number 10, Javonte Williams from Denver.
Hmm.
Aaron Jones at 9 from Green Bay.
Okay.
Najee Harris from Pittsburgh at 8. Christian McCaffrey from Carolina at 7. Joe Mixon from the Bengals at 6.
Okay. Six. Yeah, I don't know if I love that. Okay.
You ready to start guessing?
So, all right. Well, I see
it. You're going to look right at it?
Alvin Kamara. Is that the same list?
That's the list.
Oh.
Well, I just saw Kamara running
in the mirror,
and I was like, something's on behind me.
Well, the list is on behind you.
Oh, okay. Well,
so there you have it.
Okay. That's pretty funny.
I'm going to guess Dalvin Cook, number 4.
You know what? That's a solid guess.
So he's got then Chubb 3.
Nick Chubb at 3.
And then I'm going to say JT 2, Keen Henry 1.
Yes. So I did think it was interesting that Derrick Henry, coming off the injury, he had at number 1. Because bias aside, I could make a very, very strong case for Jonathan Taylor at number 1. I honestly think number 2, you know, number 1 and number 2, you could flip a coin.
I think that's a really interesting debate, just those two, because Taylor is in that age where you feel much better about being in his prime, not starting to show the wear and tear yet. He's got an excellent offensive line. It's an established running game. I think you could make the case that he's a safer bet than Henry, just because Henry's coming off the injury. And they shook up the offensive
line. Well, and Henry's 28, Taylor's 23.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a five-year difference.
You know how I am with the age. I mean, yeah. I play the percentages. Like, every guy's an individual, but the percentages are that a guy from ages 23 to 26 is – much more likely to stay healthy and be in his prime than a guy that gets up 28 to 30.
Here's some other interesting things real quick, Darren. Last year, Henry was number 1 in this list. Taylor was an honorable mention, not even in the top 10. Mm.
Well, I see that.
Yeah, I mean, I get that too.
I would say his rookie year was a little bit of a
year 2.
Yeah. Rookie year was okay. So I get that. He didn't live up to expectations. He was a very high – speaking of fantasy, we're talking about Matthew Berry leaving ESPN. He was a high fantasy draft pick his rookie year, and I don't think he didn't live up to the billing. Clearly he did last year.
Chubb jumped up 2 spots from 5 to 3.
Hmm.
Cook fell a spot from 3 to 4. Kamara fell from 2 to 5. Mixon jumped up from 9 to 6. McCaffrey fell from 5 to 7. Harris was unranked because he was a rookie. Aaron Jones dropped a spot from 8 to 9, and then Williams was unranked as well.
I think really what's worth a discussion is so many people, I don't want to say writing off. That's not a fair analogy. I think there's concern. There's question marks from certain people whether Derrick Henry will return to prominence, whether Derrick Henry will indeed be the Derrick Henry that we've grown accustomed to the last two and a half, three seasons. Fair?
Yeah.
I mean, that is in question. So
the analytics,
Jeremy Fowler
alone.
Saying, no, he's still the best in the game, which is interesting because I think if you had enough national people do it, there's probably plenty that would drop him down. They yes. probably have Jonathan Taylor one.
Yes. I even think that some people – now, the thing about Chubb is what's going on with the Browns. There are just so many variables that could affect him. And he has not always stayed healthy as it is.
Well, Cook's had issues. McCaffrey's had
issues.
Yes,
he has.
Bart Kamara's had issues.
Really, Taylor's the only guy that hasn't been stung by an injury so far.
Yeah, but he's also the youngest guy on the list.
Yes.
Eckler's been injured.
But listen, when you're doing a fantasy draft, you think about these things.
You have to.
Yes.
Well, we're getting close to that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Just around the corner. He also had, I know when he did defensive tackles, he had Jeffrey Simmons too. Which is interesting, right? Because we know that, but it's a pretty good list. We can save that because we were trying to use comparables.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one, you know. But for Henry, I think like guys like Fowler and I'll put myself in this category. Everything concerns me. But he's also a freak.
I don't have any concerns.
He's just
this different.
Well, I mean, and when I say it concerns me, it's just like it's natural to think, okay, it's a big injury. He's been used a lot. But those first 2 years, he wasn't. And that is going to help as things move forward. And he's different. He's a freak of nature in a good way. That's what he is. So I feel that, you know, we're probably going to be sitting here at the end of the season talking about a 1,500 to 1,700-yard running back. If he stays healthy. You know, 2,000, probably not.
Until I see proof that he's broken because of this injury, I'm not going there. There's no way. Because he's just, you know how I stand, guys. You've heard this enough. I don't compare everybody the same.
He's different.
Comparable to everybody else until there's now a pattern where he's breaking down constantly. Then I'm willing to go there. But right now, one off, no way.
I'm still wondering what the mindset is from over there. Are they willing to try to shave off 75 carries to try to get a more efficient Derrick Henry? Do they trust the other couple of guys within games as part of a regular flow to where maybe he's getting max 20 carries instead of so many games where he gets 28 to 30? Because it's just easy to get to that mode where you're like, oh, we got the horse back there. Let's just keep going to him. I wonder if their mindset has changed at all. That bears into what kind of production you're going to get, how efficient is that production, and also from a fantasy perspective. We're talking about number one in the league. We're talking about number one. All of those things. Like, I think he could have a really good year in theory where he gets 300 carries instead of 370-ish, you know, but then you would need Hilliard and Haskins to be solid contributors in some form where you could trust those guys for a series or two each game.
Yeah, the fact is they have hopefully a second back that they can rely on. They haven't had that.
But why? If he is the same and he is dominating games, why would you take him out?
It depends on the situation.
To keep him for longer.
I mean,
to try to keep
if you're
him
up,
at the top
need
for
to,
longer.
You need to, yeah, but you're going to paint the easiest picture ever. Oh, you're up 31-13 in the fourth quarter. Wow, give him a break. Yeah, what about the game that's not in Mount? Most NFL games come down to maybe the last drive. Could come down to the final field goal. What if it's a back and forth affair like most NFL games?
But if
he's
Haskins,
running effectively, why would you give
right,
him?
Right, but if Haskins shows you enough in training camp in the preseason to make you feel comfortable that if you're in the second quarter and there's a series where, yeah, you could keep riding Derek or Haskins is going to do his job, then and you know you can use Derek later in the game, then you probably do that.
I'm just saying there's a reason why he had those carries because
I
they
know.
They're like, hey, we need to win. Like, I'm not interested in his
well, and the guy they drafted to be his backup couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, and there's that. All right, we'll come back. Alex Pillow will join us next here on the DDC. Thanks, Phil. Congratulations on the new deal. By the way, if you missed the interview on the morning show, you could go back and listen. Go to our website.
GameNashville.com. I had a really good conversation with Philip Forsberg.
Always good to subscribe to the podcasts.
Yep,
you and do that you will too. Hear, you can go back to any of our shows, listen to any of the segments, interviews or not, but especially if those of you like hearing the big interviews, it's a great way to do it. I find that it's very informative. In fact, I sent our interview with David Poile to a colleague of ours who wanted to get brushed up on the free agency for the NHL coming up. He'll be working. And okay. Wanted to brush up on what's going on with the Preds. I said, I got an interview with David Poile, fresh, hot off the press. Send it to him right there. Boom. He listened to it.
Boom.
He said, thank you very much.
We will have that at 1 o'clock, so be listening for that. He joined us right at the beginning of the show. We're waiting Alex Pillow. I did want to say that last night I watched two episodes of Peaky Blinders. We've been talking about it last week, so I jumped in there.
New season?
It's strange. Yeah, it's strange because it's been so long.
Yeah, he had to
trying
catch
to,
up, remember
I
who
didn't
everybody
realize
is.
That the actress had died in real life. I didn't realize that. Did you? Did you know that?
I'm not sure which actress you're talking about.
The
cousin?
Well, yes. The one that basically was running it with the family. Running the
She's
family
She's in the
business.
Family.
Yeah, yeah,
She's
yeah.
a cousin
She
or
died
aunt.
In real life.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
So they
that.
Had to kill her off in the series.
Ouch.
So,
That is a dilemma I find with Netflix series sometimes. You have a lot of seasons. If there's a gap between seasons, sometimes I start a new season. I'm like, wow, I forgot. You're trying. If there's four seasons worth of history and there's 10, 12 episodes, my recall isn't always the sharpest.
I know.
On remembering who's who and what happened.
The Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. Alex Pillow is on the line with us. This interview is brought to you by Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture, where they sell comfort, shop local, shop social, 5412 Charlotte Avenue in West Nashville. Alex now joins us. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. We were actually just touching on this, waiting for you to call in. You probably, I don't know how much downtime you get as a driver, but when you do, and you were to go watch something on Netflix or the movie channels, do you have like a go-to show you've been watching? Can you even do that when you're racing? How does that work for your schedule?
So I was going to say that I have the same issue as you guys when there's like a gap in between seasons, and then I watch season two. I'm like, oh, man, I forgot about this part, and I wish they were closer together. But, we have a lot of downtime, especially when we're traveling on the airports. The flight and all that stuff. So I watch everything, to be honest. I don't really care about how the series or movie is, but I watch almost everything, and I enjoy a lot watching. So it's quite fun.
I was bringing up, I don't know if you heard it, because I think maybe Max was putting it on hold. I said I watched the first two episodes last night of the new season of Peaky Blinders, and I had to like refresh because it had been, I don't know, two years since the last time I watched it. Is that one that you got into? Did you ever watch Peaky Blinders?
So I tried, and I started. I think I watched season one, and it's good. It's a good series, but it didn't really get me to follow more. So it's there in the limbo. Like, I didn't follow up with seasons two and so on. So
okay. All right. Good to know. Well, speaking of follow-up, so I want to know from you, when you break through that barrier and you win the championship, do you get a feeling that the follow-up, which is this season, that maybe drivers maybe have a different opinion? I don't know if different opinion is the right way. Do they treat you differently? Are you now all of a sudden a guy they're looking at differently because you did win the points championship last year?
Not really. No, I mean, it changes sometimes only on the way maybe we react when we're testing or when we are in practice, that they might be more respectful. Like, let's say if you are on a good lap and they are just going off the pit lane, they want to respect you and not be on the way so you are not angry to them, which I would do that to the champions as well and to like the big names, which it's fun, but not the way they race you or not the way they look at you off track. So, which I think it's good. I don't see myself being different. It's only that we had a good year last year, and we will try everything we have to do the same this year.
You're still looking for that first win this season. How would you assess this season to this point?
Yeah, man, we're trying. We're trying hard. It's I don't know when, but it's gonna come. It's gonna show up. I think it's been a bit of up and down, which was what we were really good at last year, at being super consistent and all that stuff. But we started really strong. We had like 3 podiums in the first 4 races, if I remember well, and we were always fighting. We've always been super fast, which is a good thing. But then month of May kind of like went sideways for us with the Indy Road course having an issue with a spin on the first couple of laps when we were running up there, and then Indy 500, the yellow when we were leading. But yeah, so far I think it's quite good. We are up there in the championship in the top 5, not so many points behind without the win, but with some podiums. So yeah, I think we're strong. We're there. And the most important thing is that we are always competitive, which is what you want, to always be able to fight for wins, to fight for podiums and top 5. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be exciting last half of the season because we still have a lot of races to go. But yeah, I'm pumped.
We're not far away from you're going to be in our city here in Nashville. What do you remember about last year's inaugural event? We were there. The crowd was awesome. The atmosphere was awesome. It was obviously everybody's pumped about year two, but what about for you, a driver in the race? What did you think?
Oh, me too, man. I cannot wait. It's such an amazing place. I think it's going to stay in IndyCar as one of our biggest races of the season for sure. But I remember that it was a crazy race, to be honest. Lots of yellows, red flags, but the event itself was just amazing. As a first-year event, I think everybody loved the city and everything that was around the race, not only the race. And then racing-wise, I think it's a fun track. It's super challenging, so bumpy. Going over the bridge looks good on TV. And it's a really tough place for drivers to be on the limit. So we had a good race there. We got two cars on the podium, and I think I finished in the top 10, which we were strong. So, yeah, and a way to go there and do a better job.
We're talking to Alex Palou. He drives the number 10 NTT Data Honda for Chip Ganassi Racing in the NTT IndyCar Series, and will be racing at the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix August 5th through 7th. And, you know, you bring up the difficulties of the track and how bumpy it is. How do you prep for a race like this that you've only been to the course once? They're going to tweak a few things here and there. But do you go back and watch film? Do you jump in a simulator? Like, what's kind of a way that you can prep for a street course like this that, you know, you've only had one race to experience it?
Yeah, there's nothing really that can prepare you properly to go out there and be on the limit from lap one, let's say. But yeah, I think I always watch the past races on every single track. So I remember about the overtaking spots, strategies during the races, during qualifying, and stuff like that. So obviously we have the simulator at HPD here in Indy, which it's super fun. It's super good. It's super close to reality. And we can get a feel of what it's going to be like, especially on the bumps. But it's never the same thing as when you go there. It's the real deal, the real bag, and the real bump. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But I think everybody's excited to go back there, even if we've only been once.
How cool is it that, you know, this is race 14 of 17. So for those of you that are competing for a championship, I mean, they're all important, but the season's winding down by the time you get to Nashville. So that just adds another layer of importance. But how exciting is that, that Nashville can have such a prominent place on the schedule?
Oh, yeah. It's super exciting. It's, I think it's probably the point in the calendar where the championship battle decides, let's say, like the three, four, or maybe five guys that are going to fight for the championships are going to decide, and they are going to go till the end. So I think it's an amazing venue. As I said, so exciting with the drama that can be during the race, but also so challenging that that the guy that has the best car and the best feeling with the car on the track can win the race. So, I cannot wait to go back there. I think with the improvements they did on the track and also for the fans on the grandstands and stuff like that, it's going to be even better than last year. And as I said, it's going to stay in the IndyCar calendar as one of the biggest races for us, the most important.
Now, you have a few races, you know, in between now and the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, but I'm just going to give you a tip. You know, I think you definitely want to try and win here in Nashville, because I know you like fried chicken when you win, and we got some pretty good fried chicken here in Nashville.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, that's on the list, on the plan to win in Nashville. So hopefully we can make it happen, because it's. I also have some family coming, so they normally are not able to come visit from Spain to the U.S., but I said, hey, guys, if you need to come to a race, you need to come to Nashville. So they're going to be there, and it would be amazing to win there for the championship, but especially for my family and for the fried chicken. I have to try that. So
we're talking to Alex Palou, a driver in the NTT IndyCar Series. And, you know, one thing that I think is kind of cool as just a racing fan myself is July 30th, you all will race on the Indy Road Course for the second Indy Grand Prix, because you go back there a few times. NASCAR will be there the next day with the Cup Series. They have the Xfinity Series. It's the only time that NASCAR and IndyCar are at the same track on the same weekend. How big is that for racing, to have that crossover between the two different series?
That's amazing. I think it was the first time we did it last year,
yeah,
if I remember correctly. I don't know if it in the past it was done before, but it was amazing. I think it's good for the drivers, so we can experience the both series, and for us to compare, like a NASCAR, oh, look at how loud they are and how close they run to each other, and they can say, oh, look how deep they break and stuff like that. But especially for the fans, like going into a racetrack, a race weekend, and seeing the two biggest series in motorsport at the same days, it's amazing. So I think it's a great idea that NASCAR and IndyCar are sharing a weekend, and it's super exciting for drivers too.
Do you think that your teammate Jimmy Johnson that drives the 48 car, I mean, has he brought some of that NASCAR fan base that maybe wasn't into IndyCar? Have you seen some of that happen since he's come over?
Oh yeah, absolutely, and you can see that on t-shirts. You can see on the line for the autograph session, and also at the exit of the garage or the car garage for Jimmy, it's all full of people. And I think it's awesome. It's amazing for, firstly for me, because I'm able to share, the briefs, meetings, and everything I have in my head with him, the big champion like JJ. But also for fans that they didn't even know what IndyCar was, and maybe they like it. Maybe there are some that they still they are still not liking IndyCar, but I'm sure there's been a lot of new fans because of Jimmy. So it's amazing.
Well, Alex, we can't wait to see you here in about less than a month here in Nashville. But best of luck at Toronto this weekend and the rest of the way, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
That is Alex Palou. He drives the number 10 NTT Data Honda for Chip Ganassi Racing in the NTT IndyCar Series, his second season with them, and of course will be a part of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix August 5th through the 7th. You can get tickets at musiccitygp.com. And of course, our weekly driver interviews presented by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture. If you missed David Poile, he's coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll have more coming up next on the DDC, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Good stuff, Alex Below, David Poyle, to begin the final hour. Back here on the DDC, lots of racing here of late in our market.
Yeah.
The question is, can it all survive? Can it all survive and thrive? So you've got Nashville Super Speedway and their race weekend at the end of June. Trucks, Xfinity, Cup. Shortly after that, we just saw SRX at the fairgrounds. We've been talking about, is there an opportunity for an actual Cup race at the fairgrounds? Renovations, all that stuff. Turn that into a new home. The fairgrounds, is that still in the works? Is that possible?
And I'm now told it's still very much in the works. And
okay. Well, it's been quiet for a while.
But there's a lot of moving parts behind the scene with the fair board and then the votes that have to happen with the council and then actually putting shovels in the ground and NASCAR coming up with a schedule. So I still think it's going to happen.
Why has the fairgrounds location been such a difficult location to get stuff done?
That is a great question. And here, this is my opinion of why. Because it's the reason NASCAR is so interested in it, and it was such a great location for Geodis Park, is because it's downtown. But at the same time, there's residents all around it. So it's not an ideal place for a racetrack, but the racetrack was there first. And so it's kind of playing that fine line of, this is awesome. We want to race in, you know, race in Nashville. You know, everybody's happy with what's happening out in Gladeville. Like the racing's been good. NASCAR's pleased with it. The drivers are pleased with it. But to actually be able to say you race in a city, how many racetracks can you name that are in a city?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Chicago, is that somewhere?
Chicagoland is gone.
Chicagoland's closed. It's in Joliet, though, so it's way outside the city.
Yeah, that's not in Chicago.
Now, the rumor is that they are going to be announcing that they are going to race the streets of Chicago. NASCAR is.
Well, but you're asking existing tracks.
Track.
I would say the answer is none.
Yeah, I think Richmond could
Atlanta's
be the closest one.
Atlanta's way out. Dallas or Texas, right,
way out. Yep.
I mean, they're all way out.
Bristol's way out.
None of them are in.
Charlotte's out, way out. Dega. Daytona. Daytona's right there.
Yeah, but
Daytona's not a big city.
I mean, it's close. It's like sandwiched in between Orlando and Jacksonville. But,
yeah.
Again, it's not in a big city.
It's a mile from the beach, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, that is what's unique about it is you can run, well, Indy. But even Indy's not downtown. I mean, Indy's in Speedway.
No, that's not downtown.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're not far, but that's the thing is you would be able to have a race basically – 5 minutes, 10 minutes with traffic from Broadway.
Well, it's interesting because I get the noise. I get the production. I've done all that. I understand how it works. And so you put them out on these remote locations, but yet those remote locations are going bye-bye left and right. Chicagoland, Kentucky Speedway, all these places out in the middle of nowhere, it's not really working. Pocono, they want to do less. Yeah. I mean,
I think Pocono's gone.
You do wonder, like, was that the phase, like, and Willie, you can relate to this, like, let's build the Pontiac Silverdome out in the middle of nowhere. Let's mm-hmm. build where the Cavs used to play in Richfield out in the middle of nowhere. Let's build all these places out in the middle of nowhere. Pistons. And now everybody wants to go downtown. So is the new thing maybe to try to find a way to get it close to downtowns? I don't know. I mean, it's a little late for that because you've done all these tracks, but I'm just saying, I wonder if that model isn't a great model in 2022.
Well, it's not, but it's also they're kind of stuck with it. Like you're not gonna and that's the problem that they're fighting with the fairgrounds is, you know. Now, here's my argument: you bought a house next to an active racetrack that is older than your house, so you made that decision. And I'm going to stay on that, and we can fight about it, whatever. But the racetrack has been there longer than your house. So that's just – that's kind of the way it is. And with the renovations, you know, they're not going to fix everything with the sound. I mean, race cars are loud, but they can put up sound walls. They will have a controlled schedule. NASCAR will have one weekend a year. You'll have one big weekend a year that you run out there. So it'll be much more controlled than it is now. But you're not going to – you know, in a lot of these big cities, where are you going to build a racetrack? You know, are you – It takes more land than a stadium, so.
Okay, I was going to say, that's fair. I mean, football stadiums are big, too, so.
Yeah.
But you're right, it typically
you're
is going to
take
more.
1.5 mile, yeah. Unless you build short tracks, right. Which I'd be all for.
Sure.
But, you know, like, there's a great, the IndyCar Series, for instance, next week is going to Iowa. I love that track. It's a fantastic track. NASCAR left it, and it's probably going to close in a few years because they built it in a cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to go to it.
Yep.
So that's the problem.
Now the big machine, we know so far, huge hit. We'll see year two if it's even a bigger hit. But as Alex Pillow just said, it's not going anywhere. The drivers absolutely love it. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate is standing by.
Hey guys, y'all made a comment about, you know, if NASCAR can basically thrive here, which I think it can. But that popped a question into my head. Is the Cup Series dependent on the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series staying here? So if the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series left, or one or the other, would the Cup Series follow? Would they stay? Is it dependent?
So you're saying if one of the events left and went somewhere else, would the Cup Series leave? Is that what you're
saying? Or one or both.
Yeah, I mean... I think if the support series left, that doesn't necessarily affect the Cup Series. But look, the Cup Series, one way or another, is going to be in Nashville for a long time. I'll stand by
that. I don't
think
it's going to go away again.
No.
I think this market learned from 84. They're not going to let it get away.
It's going to be at one track or both tracks, but it's not going to go away.
Yeah. I feel the same way. TD. On our text line, I don't know if that's Tron Davenport or not, but TD from Nashville says the number one reason it is hard to create a race at the fairgrounds, there are only so many race Sundays in the NASCAR season. To get that race, someone has to give up a race. Who's it going to be? Safe to say that the place with the largest venue is not going to give up a race. Nashville Fairgrounds just doesn't have the seating capacity to bring in the big bucks. Well, one, they will give up a race because races are being given up left and right on their schedule. If you have two... A lot of them are down to one. Some of them who had one, they've gone away. As for capacity, I mean, we would be talking about if there was a Cup race at the fairgrounds, it would not be the existing structure they currently have. It would be a renovated structure to probably, what, 40,000, something
like
that?
I'd say 30.
30?
I would say 30.
You don't think more than 30?
I make it a high-demand ticket. And if you feel the need, then you can add more.
All right, that's
35
fine.
Max. But
okay.
Make it
a tough ticket.
Yep.
I'm fine with that. And a nice place.
Yes.
Nice place, 35,000. I'm cool with
and,
that.
And one, I know Max, but, you know, I make the rules.
Wow. Flex.
Sorry. I'll have a meeting with myself about it. But I... Spread the schedule out. If you're going to do it at both places, spread the schedule out. Don't have, unless it's the All-Star race, you could do like a Speed Weeks and have the All-Star race at the fairgrounds and then go to the big track. But do like a race, you know, in June or at one in April. Just spread it out a little bit to give people an opportunity to buy tickets to both.
Okay. I like it. Good discussion. That'll do it for hour number three. David Poyle to begin the final hour. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever.
Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.